Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man who's got access to a microphone and who will use it to be wrong on the internet. I am that bored man and my name is Graham Lee. And the title of today's episode is Returning to Software Engineering. I want to make a distinction between two different meanings of this phrase. So the first, which is one that I've covered on previous episodes, is the idea of the movement returning to some of the practices from software engineering. I think that the original software engineering, the sort of 1968 to mid-2000s thing, suffered from not really having a a fundamental theory beyond let's run our projects like we run our airplane building projects, because it was largely coming from United States sort of defense procurement basis. And that was the reason for its failure. But agile software engineering also lacks a fundamental theory beyond these people say this works, so let's do that. And in fact, if we look at the Agile Manifesto, where it says, we have uncovered new ways of developing software by doing it and by helping others do it, that basically is the basis for it, is this is what we've tried, which is absolutely fine. There isn't a theoretical underpinning, but there is a practical underpinning. You know, these people are practitioners saying, this is what works, try this. But they were saying that in 2001. Now, presumably, they've still been doing it and helping others do it. And other people have been doing it and helping others do it in the 20 years since then. And yet this is still like the strongest sort of theoretical basis for any method of software engineering found today is, well, this is what these people said to do 20 years ago, and this is what we're going to try. Obviously, it's possible to converge by just like carrying on every few decades going, okay, well, now let's see. These people say this is a good result. Let's try that. And maybe everybody will converge on a new manifesto around DevSec, Cloud, Ops, Test, QA, Sec, Ops. Sorry, I got stuck there. Around some new methodology, and then move forward with that. And then 25 years later, there'll be another manifesto based on another methodology. That is entirely possible. But there's also the chance that it's an inefficient way to converge on the right way of doing things. Maybe some of the techniques from what we were doing 1968 onwards are a good idea, and some of the techniques that we were doing from 2001 onwards are a good idea, some blended approach is appropriate, or some new practices are appropriate, but alongside existing practices. And at some point we have to kind of take on board, I think, the idea that not only is it possible to give a sort of theoretical underpinning to the basis of writing software, but also to the basis of writing software for people, and of working out what software to write for what people, and of delivering it. Now, I don't think that is going to be easy for reasons I've talked about on this podcast before, that fundamentally software engineering is kind of the automation of thought processes. And you can see this running through George Boole, An Investigation into the Laws of Thought. Boolean logic is basically a way of systematizing thought. You can see this in Alan Turing's work, You can see this in a lot of later work on AI. You can see it in Charles Babbage's work. All of these sort of foundational computing people were talking about automating and systematizing thought. And so coming up with a general process for that, or a sort of general framework for thought and its automation in a machine, is an exceptionally difficult task. But most software only relies on a subset of thought. It relies on a subset even of sort of deductive logic. So there isn't a great deal of all of thought that has to go into a theory of software engineering. Nonetheless, it should be possible to produce that theory, or at least sort of produce that theory in part, and then from that theoretical basis understand the software engineering practice and method a bit more. That is not the intent I want to explore more on this episode of the podcast. I want to be a little bit more sort of narcissistic and a little bit more like self-absorbed, and talk about my return to software engineering, because I think it's an important part for both of us, really, me as the narrator and you as the listener. It's important that both of us understand the context of like where I am in my sort of software engineering journey. Like, you know, on your side, you need to be able to understand what are the sort of biases that this person has, what makes him tick, what are the things he takes seriously, what are the things he doesn't take seriously, and what has led to to this position. And from my purpose, there's a bit of sort of catharsis and coming to terms with my own history, and there's a bit of understanding myself, so where are my gaps, where are my blind spots, what are the things that I am perhaps even willfully ignoring because I think that other things are more important or more useful. Before on this podcast, but to give a summary of what happened, I would say that my sort of engagement with software engineering as a career really had its peak between moving from an IT support and systems administration role in 2006 into more of sort of Objective-C development career, first in testing and documentation, and indeed a bit of IT support for a company doing Objective-C on GNUSTEP, and then into being a Mac software engineer, and then having a career writing mostly Mac, iPhone and Unix software from 2007 to 2013. This period was a very productive period. I wrote a couple of books, one on security for Mac software and one on test-driven development for iOS software. I did a lot of conference talking, as I'm doing now, sharing my professional knowledge with the community, engaged probably much more in an online community of developers through Apple development mailing lists, through Twitter, those two media. This was before every community had its own sort of Slack forum or even Discord as they do now. There wasn't really IRC, there was RSS. There was a lot of blogging and sharing through blogs and like replying through your own blog to blog posts that somebody else wrote that you now don't get because that's all been subsumed into sort of social media and Reddit. And 2013, I was working for a small app development agency very close to to where I now live, doing sort of high value iPad apps. And yeah, we were kind of, I suppose, sailing against the wind of the iPad developer ecosystem, which was much more about like lower priced apps. I don't think that sort of subscription in-app purchases were yet a thing, although they were close to being a thing because they probably started with the Daily, which was definitely an app I worked on before its launch. So we were moving to a world where apps are free, and then you subscribe to get access to like some of their features. And we were doing the sort of £10, £15 premium app, and that model turned out to not be sustainable, and so that company went away. And we had to find everybody in that company a job, and we did. Some of them decided to go indie, some of them went to large corporations, some of them went to respected and high quality software houses that were of the, if you're in the iOS developer ecosystem, you'll have heard of these companies because they are the respected software houses that were kind of doing iOS software well. They, not the ThoughtWorks, not the Object Mentors, the people who are doing, who are respected by software developers sort of across all stripes, but definitely if you are doing iOS software or Mac software, these are the companies that you look to. And so I went to Big Nerd Ranch, and a couple of my colleagues went to Black Pixel, and that was a very fun job. It was quite hard to engage with the sort of fully remote in a completely different time zone situation, but I think I made a fairly good shake of it. And so I was doing working on some of their app projects, either with colleagues in the Netherlands or with colleagues in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States. And I was doing a lot of training over in the Netherlands, which was great fun. We had this really good sort of conference hotel venue, which was in the middle of the Netherlands, in the middle of nowhere, so that people could just come to a sort of monastic retreat where they learned Objective-C, as was the fashion at the time, and they learned iPhone development. And I think everybody involved really enjoyed that. And it was my sort of mental engagement with the career really started to deteriorate towards the end of my time in working with my colleagues at Big Nerd Ranch. That I found it sort of harder to enjoy the what we called the consultancy, which is the custom app development. Harder to sort of engage with that development work, and the training side was only perhaps 1 week in four or something. So I had 1 week in four that I would get up and sort of perform and work with these people and help them do what they want, and then 3 weeks and four where I was kind of trying to coast along on these projects, so I wasn't really that interested in. And you know, basically, very soon had to just say to my supervisor or my manager that, you know, I'm not engaged with this. I'm not really able to work on it. I was sort of turning my computer on at the beginning of the morning, launching launching Xcode, the Apple IDE, doing some shit posts on Campfire, which was the chat app that we used, and then at the end of the day, shutting down Xcode. Could I point to anything that I'd done during the day? Not really. Could I point to contributions I was making? No, not really. This isn't working out. And then I didn't have the money to not work, but I had just like sort of jacked in my job, so I had to look for something. I had to look for something to do, and a recruiter at Facebook had got into contact with me a couple of months earlier. So I just went back to them and said, "Look, is there still a job at Facebook?" Got interviewed. Got in. So I spent about 4 weeks not working at the end of my Big Nerd Ranch tenure and started my Facebook tenure. And I kind of just like coasted through Facebook. I got started like the London iOS community, a little series of seminars. And that was really the bit that I was interested in, was networking, because Facebook was a very large, very sort of multidisciplinary company. There wasn't really like an iOS development group. There was people who had a lot of iOS development experiences, but who were working on Facebook's workplace product or Facebook's like anti-bullying products or new apps within Facebook or Instagram or Messenger or whatever. And we would sort of come together, and there was an existing program based over in Menlo Park, and so it was easy to take that idea and duplicate it in the London office. And I also went to Menlo Park and met people that I greatly respected and and collaborated outside of my immediate sort of London based iOS peers. So I met John Reed, who's one of the sort of foremost experts on code quality in iOS and on test driven iOS software development. And I met Kent Beck, who, of course, is one of the signatories of the Agile Manifesto, and just a deep thinker on what it is that puts programmers at risk and how they can sort of reduce that risk and become safer or feel safer in the work that they're doing. And I absolutely loved that side of it, but I fundamentally just coasted through the actual bread and butter paid work, and my health wasn't doing well. My mental health wasn't doing well. I was commuting into London every day, which was multiple hours on top of my work day. Got to a sort of after 6 months performance review, it was like fine. I think meets expectations, which is basically the way of saying not great but not objectively bad. Then 6 months later, meets some expectations, which is basically objectively bad, and then just coasted into getting my first stock payout so that I could actually quit and stop working. And then I didn't work for the best part of a year, and my personal life fell apart. I ended up living in this rented house on my own with basically no job, no social life, no personal life, just kind of completely a hobo more or less. And during that time, I had like, very little contact with anyone I knew professionally, including friends I had made through work. Spent a lot of that nearly a year trying not to use a computer. You know, you'd kind of have this idea, perhaps, like a lot of programmers would, that given the opportunity to have a year off, there's like, you know, open source projects you want to either contribute to or start, or there's new technologies you'd want to learn, or there's you know, there's like groups that you'd want to go and, you know, hang out with and learn from and contribute to. You know, I remember back then there was this popular thing in London amongst iOS developers that I knew called Side Project Sunday, where they would just like hang out in a co-working space for those of you who came into the world of work during 2020 or 2021. Co-working is the idea that people used to physically sit in the same room even if they didn't work together, you know, work for the same company as each other, and would just quietly get on and work. Now, I know people going to the same room sounds like an alien concept, but it was a popular thing. In London, like various iOS developers, I think that was like the core of it. I don't know, presumably there were people from other walks of life as well, would come together to a shared space on a Sunday afternoon and just, you know, sit and hack on their side projects and, you know, talk to each other about what they were doing. I did none of that. I basically, what did I do? Because I didn't even have a, like, you know, I was renting, so I couldn't, like, re-engineer the garden, so I wasn't growing vegetables. I did quite a bit of running and cycling, I suppose. I don't know that I did any writing per se, and, you know, certainly not a lot of like writing about programming or, you know, speaking at conferences. I think I basically just sort of like lived, and I can't remember what I spent that year on. Anyway, what it meant was when I did come back to work, I had sort of, I don't know that I had actually burned any bridges with my professional community, but I certainly felt like I didn't have the right to just go back and say, look, you know, it's me again, I'd like to start working with you some more. And I didn't necessarily feel that I wanted to either, because, you know, think about this time. So we're now in 2015 to 2016. Swift was announced while I was at Facebook and while I was really not sort of that particular, you know, that focused on my work. And you know, Facebook was not a company that engaged with Swift that early. I don't know whether they have yet. And, you know, it's not a world that I move in anymore. But because I was in that sort of low mental ebb, I just didn't want to engage with it at all. I wanted to, you know, have reasons why I was right to have sort of backed the Objective C horse. The horse of Objective C, not an Objective C horse. However, that does sound like quite a fun thing to have and a good name for a project. So if you want some kind of legacy code project, I would recommend the phrase Objective Seahorse as your project title. Anyway, I felt like this was a community that had moved on without me, and I was kind of okay with that because, like, I didn't feel I was part of it anymore. So I looked out to just try a different bunch of different technologies. Not really that interested on sort of forming a community or on on any kind of measure of like success or belonging other than like validating what I thought I knew was wrong about what I had been doing before. So my first job back, I was working for a startup that was doing a debugger at scale for high performance computing applications, and that startup then got acquired by Arm, and I left due to clash of wills with the Arm management over the fact that there were problems with the way that this sort of startup was organizing its work, such that it was very unproductive, and I had sort of focused on trying to improve that productivity and improve the confidence that developers had with working with the code, so that they could move faster. It sounds like the stupid thing that Facebook people say, but actually there is value in moving faster. There is value in having the confidence to try new things out and see whether they work, rather than very, very tentatively and carefully make every single step, because you're not sure how the product is going to poke you back when you poke it. And that was what was going on in this team. They had very, very large and slow test suite, because they had a very, very large disparate product, like target environment, lots of different Linux distributions, lots of different CPU architectures. Because this was a debugger for high performance computing applications, you got to be able to ask, like, essentially, but imagine that you're running a weather forecasting system on a cluster with like 10,000 computers, and like you're not getting the results you expect. What you would like to do, and this code, this weather forecast, is written in, let's say, C++. Like, what you would do if you had some misbehaving C++ in normal space is you would say, okay, well, what I think should happen in this circumstance is this, and what is actually happening is that. So I'm going to run it in a debugger and check at various points whether what has happened in this program is diverging from what I would expect or not. Now, let's say you're running it across 10,000 computers. What you basically want to do is what I just described, but instead of running in debugger and checking the state at certain points, you want to run it across 10,000 computers and then pause all 10,000 at the same point in the debugger and ask what is going on across all of you, and then look, is there 9,990 of them that are doing the right thing and 10 that are doing the wrong thing, or something like that. Now, you're not going to SSH into all of these boxes and run GDB. Actually, you are, but you're going to get a front end to do it for you, and that's what our application was. So you can imagine that the different operating systems that are running on the thing, the different target platforms, whether you've got C++ or Fortran or GPU code, and then if you've got GPU code, different vendors, different CPU families, and so on. This kind of provides this big matrix of different environments you want to test in. But the development was basically going at a crawl, and part of it was due to nobody really understood the code. Most of it had been written by a very high status engineer, who's now like VP of engineering, but who no longer had time to commit to the project on a day-to-day, and didn't particularly have time to mentor other developers on a day-to-day. So there were like little pockets of expertise here and there, but nobody who really understood the whole thing. So everyone was relying on this very, very slow and distributed CI system that was overworked. And so kind of going, well, I think this change will work for just like getting my new button in that allows my feature to have a button. And then wait 2 hours for the CI to come back, see that, yes, the button worked. And now I think this is the change that will like actually cause my button handler to run some code, another 2 hours. So I was trying to change that. And at the same time, because the company had been bought by this larger company, Arm, they were trying to replace all of our infrastructure with other infrastructure and replace our computers with our other computers. But the other computers they wanted us to use couldn't access any of the existing stuff. So we went from waiting 2 hours for the CI to basically having no CI at all. That made the developers even more scared of working. It's like, can we pause solving your, we would like to replace your IT with our IT for the moment while we try and actually make these developers productive? And then they can be productive on your platform, if you like. And the answer was no, and that argument got very heated, and I left. And then I went to a growth stage startup called Wealth Wizards, now been acquired, very local to me, where the technology stack was cloud, Kubernetes, Docker, Node.js, React, JavaScript, so not like using TypeScript or any fancy stuff like that. And I still do have professional contacts and friends that I made there that I talk to now. So we start to see that I'm kind of coming out of the trough now and back into productive space. And when I say productive space, I don't mean as a productive employee cog 7G in the machine. I mean as a productive member of society. And there were good and bad things there. I think really the bad thing was was a fit problem. I had been hired to be let's take a step back, everyone, and just ask whether we are going in the right direction person. My role was head of architecture. I was there because the CTO wanted to ensure that we weren't just adopting technology for technology's sake, that we were spending our innovation tokens wisely and that the things we were doing were actually addressing the customer's problem. But it was a team of people who had very sort of monomaniacal idea about what technologies they wanted to use. And so naturally there was a sort of us versus them component to it, where I would say, well, hold on, is this the thing that we want to do? And everyone would just say, yes, it is. And then, okay, well, what's the value of having this sort of critical view, particularly if it's going to then become an external critical view rather than an internal critical view? It's not us saying, is this the right thing? It's us saying we want to do this, and Graham saying, well, hold on a second, everyone. That is how that went. I then tried some consultancy and got a few clients, and that's when you get into the sort of the anything goes world, because you just rock up to some people and go, right, what's your problem? And they tell you what your problem is, and then you say, okay, well, here's how I can help you fix that problem. And that's what you do. So you can be on any technology stack, any team organization. You can have basically the world is your lobster at that point. And I did part of it inside University of Oxford. And then as the pandemic hit, the first lockdown, March 2020, all of my other clients were just going, no, you can't come into our office anymore. And we don't see how you could help our team remotely. Because don't forget, it took some time for these companies to adopt remote working practices. So that all got dropped. And then I went full time inside the university. In that university context, literally anything goes. I've worked on PHP sort of standard three-tiered applications. I've worked on Ruby on Rails, fairly standard three-tiered application, a bunch of mobile apps, some Fortran, some C++, some Python. Really, the technology is sort of anything goes. And it comes along with its own sort of community, and a very distributed and diverse community, because you've got the people inside the university who have like a wealth of different backgrounds and experiences. And then you have what's called the research software engineering community, which is the people across research in general, not just academia, but obviously principally academia, who are doing computing with a research bent. And they have their own wealth of diverse backgrounds, interests and experiences. And I think it turned out that what I was looking for was a community and not a technology, that I felt I had sort of dropped far enough behind the race in the Apple development community to not really be a member there anymore. It had moved on without me and gone in new directions, and the community around it had sort of gone in those new directions. I'm not Swift enthused, even though I do program with it and can program with it. I'm not Swift UI enthused, even though I have used it and can use it. And so the fact that that is where a lot of sort of community enthusiasm lies means that community is enthusiastic about stuff that I'm not anymore. And I'm not sure where we mutually contribute to each other, where I and that community enrich each other's experience and share values anymore. And as I said earlier, I sort of felt like I had either burned bridges or at least lost the right to sort of drop in on people. I'd lost the right to say, hey, I could speak at your conference, or hey, I'd like to ask you some questions about this thing, or related questions, because I had lost that basis of mutual understanding and excitement that goes into that community. And as we speak, I'm fairly embedded in the work at the university, which I've been doing for 2 years, and fairly embedded in that community, which I've been in slightly longer, because I was consulting in the community before I joined the university. Do I feel like I have that sort of shared understanding and excitement? Well, yeah, in certain ways I do. I don't think I'm sort of fully embedded in it, and I think that is partly just because it's this whole different way of working from what I did in that sort of first wave of my career. So I haven't grown up sharing those experiences and those cultural touch points and those areas of excitement in the same way that I did grow up with a subset, not with the entire Apple development community, but with a subset of it through a shared love of Objective-C and Unix. That was a thing that I could go to a conference and go, Objective-C Unix, and someone would go, yes, Objective-C Unix, and we would have a rapport, or they would go, Carbon, C++, and we would go, okay, we're not vibing, we'll find someone else to vibe with, that's cool. There's a much wider range of experiences now, and so I could go up to someone and go, hey, COVID-19 data, MongoDB, TypeScript, and they would go, weather forecasting, Fortran. Yeah, okay, all right. But academic career paths. Okay, right. Yes, we both want to talk about that. I'm sort of in a junior position in a lot of that stuff, particularly when it comes to the academic career track stuff. Part of the reason I'm doing a PhD now is not so much related to wanting to solve the problem. Of course I want to solve the problem, but part of it is wanting to learn a PhD is basically an apprenticeship for being an academic, and I want to understand enough about the academic career and the ways that people work with each other and engage with each other to see, how do I work with this? How do I engage with this? Is this something that I want to do more of? So I feel like I'm kind of still discovering whether I have a place in this community and what that place is. But that is way more important than finding a technology I want to work with. Like, you know, picking up a new programming language when you've been doing programming for, like, you know, 15 years professionally, or however long, I hate to think how long, sort of, you know, hobbyishly, I've been doing it before that, because I, you know, grew up with, like, microcomputers, so it could be the best part of 40 years at this point. When you've been doing that much computing, pick and have seen programming languages come and go fairly faddishly, you just pick them up. So one of the projects I'm working on now is a Xamarin application. So it's written in C#, but of course, where you have the native bindings, you have to be able to understand the native development kits of the target platform. So you might have to read some Java or Kotlin on Android, or some Objective-C or Swift on iOS. So that's five different programming languages to work with in one project. That's not a problem. It's not the, you know, find a technology that excites me. It's to find the people who to share that excitement with. And I think that is the journey of sort of like rebooting my career that I'm still on and have been on since 2015, 2016, is having dropped out of one community of people I was excited to work with. Like, let's find another community of people that I share some excitement about, about the craft of software engineering with. And, you know, if that's you, or if you sort of recognize bits of my journey in yourself, or like you have some other reason for listening to basically 45 minutes of narcissistic waffling about my own mental state, then please do get in touch. You can comment on the post on Structured Interpretation of Computer Programmers, sicperes.info, where you found this podcast, or you can send me an email, grahamlee@acm.org. Of course, if you enjoy the podcast and you would like to help support my production of material to help software engineers understand their place in the world and learn software engineering from someone who's done rather a lot of it, patreon.com/IAMLEEG, patreon.com/IAMLEEG. Please do become a patron. I really value that support. I value the conversations. I value knowing that you are there listening. I value all of this support. So there is no obligation to do any of these things. Thank you very much for being with me on this journey of rediscovering myself and all of the people around me. Take care, and I will talk to you again soon.